myself out.
I am afraid of...
I'm terrified and paralyzed by...
I am deathly afraid of...
Welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast with your host, me, Ryan Perio. Hello and welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Perio. This week, my guest is Jason Madsen of Madsen Financial Coaching. Jason is a financial coach who also has a full-time sales job as well as being a father of two. In this episode, we talk about parenthood, how he got into money coaching, and then we get into his fear of taking the leap to become a full-time money coach and lose the sales job and be full-time money coach. It's an interesting conversation, so let's get into that interview right now with Jason Madsen. All right, my guest this week is money coach Jason Madsen. Jason does money coaching and he has a regular day job. And I'm just curious, like, how did you decide to become a money coach? Like, of all the things that you could pursue, like, that's such an interesting, I would say, thing to pursue as far as a passion.
Yeah, Ryan, thanks so much for having me on. My passion is helping people with their money. And kind of how I got started was I've made a lot of money mistakes and I want people to learn from those mistakes. Mm-hmm. I basically read The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey back in 2009 and started telling people, oh, you got to do this. You got to do this. You got to pay off debt, et cetera. And it just wasn't really going anywhere, but fast forward about 7 years later, in 2016, I was leading Financial Peace University, which is also a Dave Ramsey course, while taking it because I had never gone through it before. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a student, but I'm also the coordinator. And so that was kind of fun to have both perspectives. And from there, you know, I thought, well, maybe I could potentially make this a business. You know, in 2017, we had our first child. And so I kind of put it on the back burner, but it was always something that I always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward a couple of years later, 2020 in February, finally pulled the plug, said, I'm going to go get my business license. And from there, I said, okay, now I need to create the EIN. And okay, what's my next step? I got to open up an account, a checking account, you know, for business related expenses. And from there, I said, well, everybody needs a website. You got to put together a website. So because we were right in the middle of the pandemic at that point, in April, I finally launched my website. And it was really cool to see traffic from all over the world, people clicking and searching for, you know, the different blog posts that I would put out. And then just continue to create content. Fast forward to October of 2020, got my first paying client, which was wonderful. It's always good when you can monetize your knowledge and your time and efforts. And year over year since 2020, October, I've just been increasing my client base. And so that's kind of how I got started.
Well, I mean, what a great time to get started, too, like during the pandemic when everybody is all of a sudden concerned about saving because you don't know when life is going to go back to if we're going back to normal or, you know, what normal will be when this is all over. Like, are we going to go back to everything we did before? It's been an interesting ride. Like, as a comic, like you kind of see, you know, everything you did kind of just disappear. Like, as we can't do gatherings and nothing can be, we can't do comedy clubs. Some people went to Zoom comedy, other people like myself, I just kind of just wrote and just kind of died, you know, journaled myself and didn't do any kind of stand up virtually. Cause I just felt like I didn't want to lose that crowd edge or to feel, you know, just to kind of either one, mess with my senses, because when you're a comic, there's senses that you kind of you feel from reaction and stuff like that, and I didn't want to try to tamper with those or make those maybe not work as well because I'm now not getting instant audio feedback. And now it's one of those things where I always feel like that maybe it allows for subpar product to come through because I try to keep it, you know, my material to the best it can be. And I was always afraid that, okay, if I don't allow for, you know, if I assume it's funny, even though I'm not getting laughs in real time, am I going to all of a sudden be okay with stuff that doesn't get laughs in real life once we go back? And so I've always kind of hid from that kind of, I guess, perspective. But I did start to, you know, sock away money, started to do things like Robin Hood and other little like investments, you know, kind of things, just to kind of be like, you're 45 years old, you should start planning for later in life because you can't work forever.
That's true. Yeah. And catering to your original point of, you know, not getting the laughs, not getting that instant feedback. I imagine you're just waiting for it to happen. And it's like, okay, should I go on to the next set or what should I do?
Yeah. It does kind of mess with your natural rhythm of, okay. Which I'm not a good conversationalist anyways. Like when I'm on a date or anything, I'm very much like, oh, okay. And just kind of just twiddle my thumbs and kind of stare at each other. And I'm like, I don't know what else to say at this point, but on stage I have lines galore. And so how far back do you remember? Like was it just Dave Ramsey, just seeing a Dave Ramsey book that inspired you? Or were you always someone that just tried to say it because you could see like the growth? Like if you were like a kid and you had a savings account or something, you could just see the money get higher and higher.
That's a great question. So I actually grew up having little to no money. And when I did get money, it was burning a hole in my pocket. And so I had to have several mindset shifts throughout my life, mostly in high school, college, and then post-college. And I've always been a goal-oriented person. Mm-hmm. So going to your original question of, you know, have I always been a saver? Not initially, but I've learned to be better at saving. You know, that kind of stems to a story of I heard someone in our circle of friends who had about $60,000 worth of student loan debt that they graduated back in, you know, 2000, late 90s, early 2000s. And you hear that and think, well, that's not going to be me. Like, mm-hmm. I definitely don't want to do that. But it's becoming more normal with people nowadays. I mean, $1 trillion worth of student loans out there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I fear for like even your kids, because it's like, because it's a double-edged sword. Like nowadays, you know, when we were growing up, I'm going to guess you're late 30s, early 40s, like myself. Yep. You could work your way without college. You know, sometimes land yourself in a good job without a college degree. But people with college degree would also have easier landing spots. Like you could work your way through it and just work harder. But people with college degrees would get preferred jobs. Now it's almost like everybody has a college degree now. Every kid, you know, every new young kid or younger person entering the workforce has a degree already. And so if you don't have a degree, it's terrifying. Like it's like if you're unless you have like a trade, you know, school education, you know, some sort of trade education, if you don't have a college degree, you're not even getting like entry level positions.
It's true. And when you say that, I think of the analogy, the Incredibles, right?
Yeah.
He said once everyone's super, no one will be.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, and with the like you said, the student loans, like it's like everybody's now trying to find something because they've got that money, you know, and, you know, that they have to pay back. And without it, they can't even get an entry level job. But it's like you're basically paying, you know, you have a $3 loan, which you're getting a job that pays 75 cents of every year.
Right. So how does that math add up? It really doesn't. And so you have to recreate and get creative when it comes to where do I want to go to school? What kind of education do I want to have? Mm-hmm. And then what do I really want to pursue in the end? What do I want to do that's going to give me fulfillment, that I'm going to make an impact, that I can monetize, mm-hmm. you know, but also feed myself. And if I have a family, feed my family at the same time.
Which you've got, you have got a family that you're feeding. And so what is your job outside of your passion for money coaching?
Yeah, I work full time in sales.
Okay. So has that sales job like helped you, I guess, for like client building and stuff? Have you used some of your sales, like, I guess, I wouldn't say tactics, but at least like that mindset of, okay, you know, I may get 10 no's today, but one yes for the 10 no's makes up for it. Do you have like that kind of mindset when you go out for client building and to try to build your client base for your money coaching position?
Yeah, excellent question. So I've received heavy training. Mm-hmm. I used to sell copiers, and that persistence and the rejection combined has desensitized my brain to, I don't care about how many no's I get today. It's all about that one yes. And when you can get that yes, it makes you feel like a superhero. It makes you feel like all of the hard work that you've put in mm-hmm. now has come to fruition, and you can see to the other side.
Yeah. And ironically, when you said copier salesman, I was like, it makes me think of the movie The Postman with Kevin Costner, where he's like the postman, and the villain in that was a copier salesman. That's what he did before like the world like fell apart. Like the main villain, he was a copier salesman. So it makes me laugh every time anybody says, I did copier sales for a little bit of myself. And so I did that for a very short period because we were also trying to sell digital storage, like with SQL and stuff like that, to kind of keep, you know, digital copies of your documents, not just copy in the copy machine. The machine then feeds them to a filing system so that you can find them online.
Well, yeah. And then you become a technology advisor at that point, and you can enhance or add to your capabilities and services when you're selling solutions like that.
And so when you work in sales and now you have a family and your dream is to leave the sales job behind, how good are you at the sales job? Like, is it something like that you enjoy doing, like also in addition to just your coaching job? Or is it something that's like, you know, I do it because it's what I can do. It's not what I want to do.
Another great question. So I really enjoy sales. I love prospecting. I love going out and seeing customers, potential customers, you know, net new, as well as current customers, trying to continue the relationship and add value. And that's, I think, where I wrestle, because mm-hmm. I do enjoy the competition. I do enjoy going out and trying to problem solve in a complex way. And there's no limit to the potential. And so for me, because I enjoy it, it's one of those, how do I transition, you know, from something that I do love to pursue a passion that I really do enjoy as well, but I'm able to replace that income to the level that I am now. So
it's really hard when you're really good at it, because it's like you see the numbers and it's like then you look at your other side and it's like, how do I, it's a fun, and but it's something I think you enjoy. Like, it's something you like to look at the numbers to see, are you getting closer? Because you seem like you're very numbers driven since you're in sales and everything. So you look at your client building and everything you do on money coaching, feel like you're one of those people that checks it and sees, hey, am I a little bit closer to matching what I do in the sales realm? And if you can match it, does that mean, does the temptation to do both at the same level, you know, just keep you in the sales job just that little bit longer, just because it's like, you know, right now, if I'm making both equally, that's a lot that I can, you know, perhaps provide my kids and my family, you know, to kind of nest egg up. And because as someone that also enjoys saving money, that's got to be, you know, on your mind as well.
Yeah. And I think the fear is that I won't be a really good coach. And because I am good at sales now, this is a kind of a humble brag, but you know, in 5.5-6 years of doing this particular position, I'm an overnight success, right? Because everything takes time to develop, and I'm still learning and training, because there's always some new initiative, there's always some new product or widget or clickety clack that you're trying to sell. But really, selling is listening to what the client's problems are and co-authoring a solution to be able to, again, add value, but also actually solve the problem.
Yeah.
And I feel like I do a pretty good job of that now.
Yeah. And all of that translates to your coaching, like all of that sales thing, just basically, you're basically on the other edge of that sales, which is, you know, something interesting is that you're actually like, now it's like you're trying to solve their problem and get their money, but you're also trying to help them keep their money as well. Like, how do you, you have to do the other end of it to say, hey, how can I sell you on not buying that new car today and just pocketing this? And so you're selling them not to buy. Like, it's such a fantastic, I guess, reversal. But it still uses the same skill set of just building that relationship, seeing the problem with their finances, and coming up with a solution.
Yeah, and I like the phrase, we buy emotionally and justify intellectually, because a lot of people have a lot of different emotions when it comes to money, how they were raised, where they're at now, if they inherited a bunch of money, they don't know how to handle it, versus, you know, people that are diligent, that have goals, that want to leave a legacy for their kids. And those are the different clientele that my message is kind of getting out to. But delayed gratification is basically what you were saying. How do I get them not to buy that new car and go with coaching? Because, hey, short-term temporary sacrifice is better for a long-term gain.
Yeah, that's exactly what I believe too. Like, it's one of those things where, as someone that's bought a couple cars, it's like I see the temptation of like, oh yeah, I've almost paid this one off completely, you know. And I start, you know, every once in a while I'll peek at Auto Trader or something, like, so if I were to get a new car, what would that look like? But at the same time, I'm like, I can't do that now, because at some point you're going to need that money. You're, you know, if you buy that car today, what's going to happen? You know, what are you sacrificing tomorrow? What can you not afford to get? And I always struggle with that, because as someone that grew up with a mother that basically, I guess, would say justify, or when she's down, she would shop, and so she would spend money to make herself feel better, to kind of have a change. Like, she would get a new bedroom set to kind of change her mindset, or, you know, get a car just to kind of, you know. And then, you know, you see on the other end of that, you know, there's, you see the money and you think, okay, we have it, but you don't know the long-term ramifications of buying that car now, when you could have socked that money away and had it gain interest, or, you know, just, you know, compile into something more to save. And just, you know, maybe, you know, if your car is good, I say drive it until it's just, you know, you can't or it starts to break down or have problems that you're going to be like, okay, this is going to be a regular thing. I might as well get something that's less maintenance at this point, because the cost of maintenance will then be, you know, basically outweigh the cost of just having a car payment.
Right. So, and to kind of cater to that point as well, going into, you had mentioned your mom purchases, or she had purchased mm-hmm. a bed set or other things when she's down, you know, when people are upset or sad, sometimes they resort to kind of like a retail therapy.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for.
And diving into the reason why, you know, do they not feel valued enough? And so things or stuff is going to help them feel better, make them happier. When in reality, the stuff isn't going to make them feel happier. You know, the people around them giving them encouragement and motivating them through this difficult time, that's what's going to make them feel better. Yeah, and then as far as the car goes, you know, you get to a point where, okay, I'm almost finished paying this off. Do I want to enter into a new car payment? Like, really, do I want to do that? Or could I just drive it a little longer, pay the regular maintenance, and pay that car payment to myself or to an investment that's going to help me in the long term? But again, weighing that, like you said, weighing that to a degree of, okay, it's going to cost me this much to repair. The car's only worth this much. All right, what are my options now?
Yeah, for me, it was, I paid off my old car in 2013, and I drove it for 3 years with no car payment. But in 2016, it had almost 200,000 miles on it. It had been sitting out in the sun, so it was pretty much like blistered. All the paint was starting to blister and everything, so it looked really, it started to really fade. And so I was just looking at the next thing up, which is I had a 2009 Sentra, and I just was like looking at Altimas, and they were like, I was dabbling it in, you know, new Sentra SR. Okay, new Sentras will be, you know, certain such price. So it was like 17 or and something like that, 16 or 17,000. Well, I look at the Altima and the SR, it was like 19, and I was like, okay,
wow.
And so I was like, okay, the Altima is just a couple grand more. And so I started budgeting in my head. I'm like, I don't want to pay more than because I paid $200 a month for my car, the Sentra, when
nice.
I got it. And so I had mediocre credit. Now I had really good credit because I had paid the car off. I had paid all my debts down. So I was doing pretty well there. And I was like, okay, I don't want to pay over $300 a month, because I just monthly wise affording it. Because like my dad just taught me, is like, write down all your bills and total them out, and just that's how much you pay every month. So if you're paying $1,000 in rent, $200 in cable, $300 in electric, you know, just whatever, you know, whatever they were, and just see how much, and minus your income, and that's how much money you have left.
It's so, a good dad.
Yeah, my dad is very, very frugal. My dad is an amazing shopper. He's someone that can go into a store and just look, like not buy anything, can just look at everything and be okay with just walking out with nothing. And I was like, I'm somewhere in the middle. I will go in and shop, but I'll just go look at clearance. And that's how I'll justify spending money that it was on sale. And so that's how I've always budgeted. And I'm just a happy medium. But I was just, when I got my Altima SR, it was at 18, and I was like, okay. And they got the car payment down with the down payment I had to $299, so I got it for $300 a month, and it's a 6-year lease, so it was a longer lease than I was used to, but I was okay with it because it was like, okay, I can afford this at that juncture, and my income has gone up significantly, you know, every year. It's, you know, so is my rent, but it's gotten better, and it got easier for me to be able to afford it. And so like I'm at the last few months of it getting paid off, and so I'm, you know, kind of excited to say, okay, we'll finally pay it off into the car. And then, you know, you just start looking, okay, you start to, it's, you know, your mind's like, okay, well, what if you were to get a new car? It's been 6 years, but I try to keep it for 3 or 4 years because some people I know lease, and I'm like, I can't imagine how much that cost you. because you're not getting any of the, I would say, equity of car ownership once you're all said and done with the lease. You're paying a car payment for a car you don't really own.
And you turn it back in.
Yeah. And you have to pay any kind of overages or any kind of fees for any kind of, say you had to take an emergency trip across country to see your dad, that would be a penalty of mileage.
The added expenses that you are unexpected when you have to do something like that with the overage of mileage.
Yeah.
And any wear and tear on the vehicle itself, golf ball hits the side door or whatever, right?
Yeah. As a comic, I have a lot of those. I have lots of rock damage from just driving through like places like New Mexico and Arkansas and stuff where there's mountains and lots of stuff and rocks just get kicked up and they ding your paint and everything else. And, you can get them fixed, but it's like how much, if they're just superficial, how much money are you willing to just to make it look better for you?
Sure.
As being a dad, how do you look at saving money with kids now? Does that worry you? Like, does your money coaching come into to tough customers there at the checkout line and everything and the grocery stores and everywhere else you have to take your kids? Because as they get older, they're gonna want are you going to use your money coaching to kind of help them kind of say, hey, let's save for tomorrow?
Yeah, that's a good question. As far as taking kids to grocery stores, that has been a disaster. So we stopped doing that.
Just food magically appears.
We order online and wait for them to tell us, hey, it's ready for pickup. And so we go and do that.
I never thought of that as a parenting move. Like, I've always thought of that as like a convenience. I've never done it again because I clear it shop and I'm like, you can't tell Kroger, hey, what's going on the clearance meat? Get back to me. You can't.
Sure.
But I was like, as a parenting thing, I would say that's super convenient because I'd never thought of being the parent with the kid at the grocery store that I want this, I want that. It's the cry when they can't get it, all the little things that stores do to get kids to be distracted and everything else.
We just like to set ourselves up for success and avoid meltdowns and tantrums. as far as instilling values into our children, we operate under the premise of we're not taking on debt. The only debt that we will consider is a mortgage, but we want to make sure that it is a reasonable mortgage and that we have the stuff in place to take care of maintenance needs, mm-hmm. which is outside of our emergency fund. But thankfully, my older son really enjoys numbers. And so he, I think, can calculate pretty quickly, what adds up to what. And he's almost five. So
that's awesome.
down the road, we'll be able to have a little deeper discussions about what money entails. But he's got a jar that has the three S's, the save, the spend, and the share. And so we look at all three of those things. Okay, what do you want to spend your money on? What do you want to save? And what do you want to share? If you spend all of your money, there is no money left in that spend jar. If you share all of your money, there's no money in that share jar. And if you save all of your money, well, there's no other money to be in the save or the share. But having an equal balance of the three will hopefully allow him to live a meaningful life, being able to share, to save, and to spend, and do it responsibly.
Yeah, and that's all you can do. I mean, he's going to be, unfortunately, there's temptation to bounds everywhere. You can only keep them at home for so long. And, just when they're not at home, there's vending machines, there's Coke machines, there's toys, there's going with their friends to stores and everything else that, sleepovers, pizza parties, all kinds of things that that'll end up at some point tempting you to spend money. Because as you even get older, parties, social gatherings, hangouts, things like that, you spend money on beverages, gas to get there, Just there's every you really you don't realize how much money stuff costs until you actually sit down and say, how much gas did that cost you? How many, you know, if that's 3 gallons of gas, that's right now $15 here in California. It's probably in the 20s. Like, it just
that's a really good point. And we had a funny learning lesson just a day or two ago, where he unrolled the entire toilet paper roll onto the ground because he thought it was funny. And I said, well, it's coming out of your money jar. And he's like, okay, how much is that going to be? And I said, it's going to be a dollar. It's really tough. You know, 2 years ago when we started this pandemic, it would have probably been like $15, right? Because you couldn't find toilet paper anywhere. But yeah, it was just...
I would have had him re-roll it.
I say, hey, this is your roll now. You're re-rolling this and using whatever. No. So that was just a funny kind of anecdote that occurred the other day.
But it's always interesting when you have kids and they you have these teachable moments that you didn't even plan for. Like, you didn't plan for that to happen. But here it's like, it's almost like it falls into your lap. And I wonder how many times that happens when you're coaching. Like, you just have a situation, you know, just a teachable moment for somebody financially that just drops into your lap. Like, hey, perfect example, you know, it's just sometimes life is amazing that way. Like, it just, you're just going through it and you just have a teachable moment. Just, you literally walk in, open the door, and an unrolled toilet paper thing becomes a teachable moment of a kid of, wow, this is actually going to cost me. This isn't something, you know, it was funny. Because I wonder how long he thought about that after he gave you that dollar. Like, how funny was it when he had to hand you the dollar?
Sure, sure. Now I'm the one laughing. No.
Yeah. But I mean, kids are fantastic. Like, there's a office thing that we did as a group at my job where it's spaghetti and marshmallows. And the goal is to take the spaghetti and the marshmallows and to make like the tallest structure you can.
Interesting.
And they say the most successful group of people to do this are kindergartners out of every like age group, just because
it's wild.
As adults, as the older we get, the more we plan and we try to strategize. And there's so, cause you only get a certain amount of time. It's like 30 minutes or something like that. And so most of the adults, okay, if we plan, they plan, execute, as they execute it, things go wrong. You don't have time. With kindergartners, as soon as you give them the instructions, they're going. They're stacking. They don't wait for instructions. They're already starting to just build, and it may break. But because they haven't wasted any time planning, they're back at it. You know, as soon as it breaks, we're back at it, building it a different way. And so they're always the most successful group because they never waste time planning. They just go. And some ways it's kind of scary, but it's also kind of interesting that, hey, they don't know that there's a plan, you know, that they haven't been taught that. Like, your kid now, like, when you watch kids on TV and stuff, it's like, and you wonder how they can be that way. It's like, they never knew they couldn't. That's the whole thing, is as we get older, we build these like mental obstacles of, oh, we're not supposed to be in front and center. You know, they don't know that. They see a group of people and they're, you know, the life of the party. Like, if you've had, I don't know if you've had social gatherings where they just, you know, weave in and out of that situation, like little house parties with your folks or, you know, Christmas time. They don't know that, you know, it's about everybody else. They just think, okay, well, it's, you know, my presence, my time, you know, just.
Yeah, the social cues either get overlooked or missed completely, and then you have to corral and
but it's just fascinating to me because it's like, also I was like, in some ways that's a help because it's like one of those, it, like as a sales job, those, they'd be amazing salesmen because they don't know a no is bad. They just know they got a no, okay, you know, and they just move, you chuck right along
on
and,
to the next.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's such a fascinating, you know, just, it's just fascinating when you see younger minds, because like as a comic, I'll see guys that bring, you know, sometimes they'll have their 10 or 11 year old children like actually, you know, performing and stuff like that. And they just, and they're like, I don't understand how they can do it. I was like, because they never knew that they couldn't. They never, but no one's ever put the doubt in their mind. They haven't been old enough to develop a feeling of doubt or not confidence. And it's like, sometimes as somebody like that, I was like, you know, we don't foster that. And somewhere, I don't know where we lose it. I don't know if it's like junior high when you start getting into the social dynamics and people start to point out things to you that maybe, you know, that you kind of get be self-conscious. And I think that that's kind of the start of it. If I'm just thinking outside, it's like middle school and stuff where people start making fun of you, or, you know, saying something about the clothes you wear because you didn't know anything about your clothes until somebody's like, oh, that looks stupid. Oh, you know, like you just, it's, and you just, I think that that starts to build that doubt because you hear those little kids poking fun at you. And I'm for the 98th podcast episode, I'll advocate. I just wish that they had some sort of low level psychology class, like in elementary and junior high, to kind of teach people, hey, there are repercussions to saying things to people, and just to not, you know, like high level, but just, hey, keep in mind when you say things like this, that people, it hurts people's feelings. And when people's feelings are hurt, you know, it's not a good thing. And just to, cause I just feel like in, you know, those schools, your world is 200 people. And then you don't know that everybody says, you know, there's a great big world out there, but at 7 years old, it's not, you know, the only world you know is the one you see Monday through Friday and then your parents Saturday and Sunday.
And that's pretty big in itself.
Yeah. But it's like, you don't, you get older, then you realize, oh, it didn't matter. But at the same time, like that whole time you're in it, I just feel like we want them to see that there's more out there in the world. But at the same time, I understand that this is your world now. And
right. Right.
It seems like your kids, though, like I said, your oldest looks like he may be gifted in sales. Like he is already, you know, eye on the ball, eye on the money. What about how old's your youngest? Like your.
He just turned 3 months.
Okay. So we have yet to see what skills he's got yet at this point, but.
Right. Right now, he's just learning how his arms and legs all work.
How does the oldest like the youngest? Is he like assistant caretaker?
He does help out, and he's very kind, gentle, and tender. We have to remind him several times to continue to be gentle and everything. But initially he was hesitant, but he's really grown into the big brother role. So
that's cool. We'll see how long that lasts once the other one starts following him around and just everywhere he goes. And then, because that's the crux of being the older brothers. If you're going anywhere, you're going to also send younger brother, because younger brother's going to want to go. And if he doesn't go, he's going to fuss and stuff until he does go. And so it's just the dynamic of, I guess, brotherhood is just to have the, you know, the younger one kind of be the tag along and, you know, be the, you know, kind of the anchor, if you will, to the social dynamic sometimes. But I'm pretty sure there'll be some hemming and hawing, and I want to play with this, and seeing one play with something, and so the other one then wants to play with it, and so it becomes a fun, you know, parenting of, you know, just how to share. And
yes, so I am the youngest of three, and so yeah, I definitely understand the tag along aspect of it, and you know, it's, you always want to be like your older siblings, and they motivate you and encourage you, and you want to do stuff that's cool, you know, because they're older than you, and
you want
hang out with their friends. Oh, absolutely. And me being a center of attention a lot of times, liking the attention, it was always cool to be like, hey, I know older people. You know, who do you know that's older?
Yeah. Was your brothers like the cool kids in school, or like were you more the popular one?
I would say, and if my brother ever listens to this, I will apologize profusely, but I would say I was more popular, actually, to the point of, he was a senior when I was a freshman and in high school, and I just didn't know how to compose myself in front of him and his friends, and almost was kind of snooty to a degree. And I apologized for that, and we've mended since then. But I would say that I was more of the popular one.
But maybe that's just you being more comfortable in your own skin, just because you were okay with that group, because y'all were, I guess, so close in age that you had social dynamics with that group of people that you didn't feel intimidated or put off by an older group. You, like you said, you were the center of attention. You've been, you know, you've always kind of had that, I guess you would call it confidence, to be able to interact with those people and others. And so you just developed, because you were the youngest and you had your survival skill to hang out with your brothers, was to kind of adapt and also, you know, basically take social dynamics that probably are well above your age and use them just to kind of, you know, keep the hangouts going, and, you know, still hang out with the older brothers and stuff. So it's your youngest may be, you know, just that social, you know, that social butterfly that you were, you know, that had to, you know, because he's got to do hang out with guys 5 years older than him, his social dynamics get so far advanced that he's able to bridge that age gap and stuff like that to feel like part of the group. And then just to be, as a comic, I get it, you know, social wise, totally, as you're comfortable in your own skin. They may not have been, being older and stuff like that, and not having someone like you had them to look to kind of guide you. Okay, this is what I do in this situation. They had no guidance. So you're kind of learning from their, you know, mistakes and missteps that, hey, don't do that.
100%. 100%.
So yeah, you may have the salesman in the crib right now taking a nap, but and you have the numbers guy, you know, already 5 years old, paying you dollars out of his share jar. Hopefully that kind of is of the share jar. Hopefully he has some in the share.
Yep, definitely.
So how much longer do you think, like, have you set a goal to where if you reach your goal at your money coaching, that you will basically take the leap and say, so long, sales job?
Yeah. As of now, June, what is it? Oh, no, it's July now. July 2nd, 2022. My goal is 3 years.
Okay. So 2025?
Yep. That's the goal.
It's a round number. You know, it's like, it's a 25, you know, 25 cents. You know, you could a quarter, you know, just everything about that seems like it's such a nice, it's going near, it seems like you're on your way, you take it in stride, which is, like, as a salesperson, it helps because you're not living and dying with every client or call or to recruit or, you know, build your customer base. I feel like a lot of businesses, if you're not geared the right way, it can spook you when you're stuck with adversity. Like, I think your sales job is such a great thing to have if you're going to go into business for yourself, because it kind of, like you said, even though it dehumanizes you, I say it just gives you more confidence in saying, okay, I'm gonna, you know, you have that confident talk to yourself, I'm gonna get no's. You know, there's a confidence in saying, you know what, there are people that are going, even close friends that may just not want to be a part of this, and I'm okay with that. Whereas right. other people may jump into it like, okay, all my friends are going to do this, I'll have them. And then you get the first no, and it can throw you because you don't know, you know, you thought that person may have been a yes. And it's one of those things where if you're going to go into business for yourself, there's a mindset you have to have. And just quality and quantity. You've got to be able to understand, like, hey, I've got to talk to this many people on average over the, you know, this week, hopefully, you know, one or two is interested. And then next week, 10 more people, hopefully one or two. And it's just, you have to have that kind of just keep going mindset. And that's such a really cool thing that you have. And especially at such a young age to have that, you know, with your kids and stuff like that, to maybe, you know, they learn by watching, like, hey, my dad's trying to do this, you know, thing on his own. And he's just constantly going at it. Like, he's not giving up. He's not, he just keep, you know, just, you just tell your kids, like, keep at it. Like, you know, there's going to be times where you're trying to do something and it breaks or it doesn't, you just feel like you can't do it. You just take little pieces at a time, just one day at a time, just keep going. It's such a cool, like, I would say something to kind of, I guess, as a kid, probably watch your dad do, like, for the, at least for the older one. The youngest one probably doesn't know what's going on at this point, but, you know, for them to see that and just to see, you know, like, if for the youngest, would he'll, you may be in full swing by the time he's actually kind of really aware of what you do. You may be just fully into the coaching thing, and then you're teaching them, this is what I want to do, this is what I had to do to get it. And it teaches them, okay, so if I can find out what I want to do, which I always tell my nieces and nephews, find it as soon as you possibly can. Because it's, the quicker you can find out what you want to do, it makes life so much easier because you know what you want to do. Because when you don't know what you want to do, then that's when you're kind of, you're having to go to college for all these different courses and you're doing all these different training things. When you find something you really, really are passionate about, it's all you think about, and you just get, you just hone and get better at. So everything you do helps you achieve that, whether it just be reading a book, a seminar, just anything. And so I'm just super, I say, I feel psyched for your kids, because it's like, this is, you know, like, what better way to teach them what I want to do than by doing what you want to do full time?
Yeah, that's good, Ryan. You know, a phrase comes to mind that I saw a while back. A river doesn't cut through rock because of its power, but because of its persistence. And I think about that persistence and the drive, the motivation to keep pushing forward, even though it's difficult and tough now, because I know what it's going to be like in 3 years. And I try to teach that to my clients as well. You know, you're paying off debt, you're trying to build your emergency fund, you're trying to figure out retirement. You push through it now because it's not powerful, it's not glamorous, you know, but in 1, 2, or 3 years, when you're free of your debt, when you have your emergency fund built up, then you're going to look back and say, oh, I'm so glad I made those sacrifices, because we're in a much different position now.
Like when you get pre-qualified, or you when you actually qualify for those big financial purchases, like that's got to be, you know, just such a, it's such a thrill for, I would think, as a person. Like that's, I'm saving for a house myself. And I, you know, you, like you say, you realize, you start reading things like you need 20% of your income for the down payment. You know, you need 20%, you know, 20% of the house cost, you know, already yep. saved. Then you got your, like you said, your emergency fund, which is, they say, I think, what is it, 1/4 of, you know, or 1/4 of your down payment should be also another set money amount set aside for any kind of like mechanical emergency or construction you may need to have for repairs and stuff like that. And so you may think, oh, I got good credit and I've got a, you know, I got a few grand. Well, that's not, you have to have like for $100,000 house, like 25 grand, you know, plus 5 grand repair cost and things like that just set aside. So it's like, you have to have almost $30,000 to $35,000 just to be ready to buy $100,000 house, which doesn't exist in today's market. But
unfortunately,
but I mean, just even looking at that low, that's those are the kind of things that you have to, you know, be ready for. And it's such a, like I said, you're such a good lesson for, you know, for your children, just to have that, you know, to also see that, you know, not just to chase your dreams, but to also say, hey, you know, while I'm doing things I'm passionate about, I'm also doing this to make sure that you are taken care of. And I want you mm-hmm. to do this when you're my age and you have your children, that you can also, you know, take care of them with, you know, housing and emergency fund and things like that, because it's just gonna get harder. Some of it's easier, like it's just interesting the ways you can make money now with like social media and all the things technology brings, of all kinds of ways of monetizing things like podcasts, and everybody's jumping on everything, and it's an interesting thing. And I'm super interested to see even how, when your kids get to that age to where they can make money, what are the ways to make money then? Because it just seems, it almost seems wild, wild west right now. If you have a day job, you can also do podcasting and, you know, sponsors. If your good podcast is good enough, you're getting paid sponsorships. And, you know, if you're good at, you know, doing things on social media, like making funny videos on, you know, Instagram, you can make money doing that. Like, it's just fascinating to see the different ways the income, like it's just Venmo and stuff that you don't have to. The days of writing checks are almost over. Like, I do it for rent and that's about it. Like, it's really like it's all about Venmo and card and everything else.
It's so true. Good point.
But so what was like your greatest save moment? So what is the moment where you had like your like money was burning a hole in your pocket and you were able to calm the urge and actually sock that money? What is like the greatest, what is the greatest conquest of your savings, I guess, would you say, to save versus spend?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Well, recently our 6-year-old TV just went out and we were told it was a 7-year warranty. So we were kind of excited about that. But, you know, back then it was really cheap in my mind. It was like $240 to buy a TV, right? And just recently, within, I don't know, a week and a half, it gave up the ghost, if you will. And, you know, I could have ran out and bought a new TV right then. But just wanted to kind of sit on it, think about it, actually go through the proper channels to get the warranty figured out. And it was going to cost $200 for a licensed technician just to come see if it was repairable or not. And I thought, that's absurd. And so, you know, after a week and a half, I said, all right, my son, you know, is going to lose his mind if he doesn't have cartoons. So it's time to go figure this out, and ended up getting one for $160. And same size and everything, but it's just crazy how much technology has reduced, you know, because there's so much other technology out there. A lot of people are looking for the big screen TVs, and we just wanted to replace what we had. It was a modest 40-inch TV and nothing outrageous.
I have a 48-inch, and that's good. It's been good enough for me. Like, to me, the new TVs, they don't even, it looks annoying. Like, I would say, like, if you watch like a Marvel movie, like on a high end, it's so good. Like, you can see the fakeness of the scene. Like, my TV is just good enough that it's, the special effects still look special. It's like when you have such a really good TV, you can kind of see almost the green screen of the guy. Like, you can kind of
CG.
Yeah, you could see the CGI.
It's calling it out.
Yeah. And so I'm like, I like having my TV because it, like, the special effects still look special. Like, it on a regular TV, you can almost see them floating in this room, and just the everything projecting around it doesn't look. It's too real. Like, we've gotten too good at the visual. And so I totally get, I'm on board with that. Like, I, you know, I haven't replaced my TV because the same reason. I'm like, why would I don't want something that high end if I can help it. And and what do you need 70 inches of TV for? I get it. You know, at some levels I get it if your room is just enormous, but if you're living in a one bedroom apartment, 40 to 48 to 55, even that seems like that's almost too big for an apartment. Well, I thank you, Jason, for doing this. This has been an awesome conversation. I'm sure you're like, I'm super excited. I hope in 3 years, like even maybe before then, you're ready to take on, you know, just the career of money management and just do, you know, pursuing that dream, and that you're able to, I guess, you know, say goodbye to the sales job and just really go whole hog into money management.
Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate you having me on. And just a last kind of goal of mine to share, because I'd love to return the favor when I do launch my own podcast, which hopefully will be before the end of the year. I'd love to have you on as a guest as well.
Absolutely. I'm down to do that as well. That'd be great. Have you thought of a name for it, or how far into development?
Yeah. So right now I just have the name.
Okay.
It is going to be called Milestone Money Moments.
That's awesome.
And that can mean anything. So the full gamut. Are you reaching toward, you know, your next milestone? Have you reached your milestone and how are you celebrating? Or, you know, are you kind of working towards that first milestone? So
that's awesome. That's a great conversation. And it, again, feeds right into what you do, and that, you know, hopefully that'll maybe inspire you to get some more clients and maybe expand to, you know, outside of California where you could do virtual or face-to-face even. Do you do virtual coaching for, I guess, some of your clients? Do you have virtual options? Or
I do have Zoom. I typically prefer in person, but Zoom works just as fine. I typically do most consultations via Zoom or phone call, but in coaching in person is typically what I prefer. It's just nice when you can see the facial expressions and dive deep into their emotions and what they're trying to feel. You don't get the same feel through the screen.
Yeah, I get that. And that's, I kind of, like I said, I started this during the pandemic and I was like, well, this Zoom would be perfect. And then Zoom went and changed their free package to only 40 minutes of one-to-one meetings. It used to be unlimited.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is perfect. Everybody has Zoom. And then we switched back and now it is, we are now full on into, I do Facebook. This works really well. Like, I was surprised how good Facebook Messenger works. I had a guy that couldn't get his Zoom up and I was like, let's just do a video call on Facebook Messenger. I was like, it works the same. And it's been a dream, like, to do it. And so I enjoy doing this as something that, you know, even though I'm a comic, I just enjoy talking, you know, having these kind of conversations of things people are afraid of and all those things that we had, like little things that we're afraid of, and some so interesting. And you're like the second or third that's talked about pursuing their dreams. And it's been, you know, just a great conversation. Like, I had guys that real estate agents that are in, that also, like you, were that I have to do this for my family, you know, like this is the big game now, as to quote Game of Thrones. You're in the big game now, like you're, when you go into business for yourself. And I wish you luck, and I'll happy to be a guest on your podcast when you get it going. I would love to talk about my milestone money moments.
That's awesome, Ryan. Thank you again for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Is there any social media you like to, that if they wanted to follow you, can be on, or like to find you or your coaching?
Yeah, I've got a website, madsonfinancialcoaching.com. Just Instagram is at Madsen Financial Coaching, and LinkedIn is linkedin.com/in/Madsen Financial Coaching. So I try to keep it all pretty basic and similar.
Good call. I always try to keep everything uniform so that way they can find me on every platform. So I couldn't find Some of All Fears on every platform, so I did Some Fear Fans for my social media. But yeah, thanks again, Jason. I'll let you get back to here to your parenting and your relaxing Saturday afternoon.
Greatly appreciate it. Thanks, Ryan.
So that was Jason. That was a fun conversation. I'm sorry I was a chatty Cathy. He just really impressed me. Like, I felt I was just blown away by how everything just kind of felt like serendipity. Like, everything just kind of fell into place. And so check out Jason Madsen at madsenfinancialcoaching.com, as well as Instagram. We'll have the links in the show notes. And check out his podcast once he rolls it out. I'll be sure to plug that when I'm on there, as well as when he actually rolls it out. That it's a really great idea to talk about saving money and just share stories of times you saved instead of spent, because there's so many stories of when you splurge. As for me, I just kind of did, I had a week off, so I just kind of hung out at Backdoor did a couple of sets over the weekend. Then I was on a date Saturday night, and that was a really fun time. Almost too fun. Like, we had a great time, and I woke up hungover, and so all day I've been recovering, so this episode may not make Monday morning. It may not. I don't know how Apple does it right now, running a little bit behind. I also set up a new setup. I have a Zoom H8 now, as well as a Shure MV7 microphone on a boom box or boom stand here. And so I'm kind of learning how to lean in and talk like a studio, like a DJ right now. So I'm learning, kind of figuring it out as I go here. So let me know how it sounds, if it sounds any better or worse or any different. Again, I thank you guys for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I hope you guys have a great week. Stay cool if you're in the Dallas area. We're in the 100s for this whole week. Anywhere else, hopefully you're staying cool already and having a great summer. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Have a great week. And now some thank yous for the folks that make this show possible. Thanks to Barry Whitewater for my art and graphics. You can follow him on Instagram at bwhite H2O. Get it? H2O, like water. You can also follow him on Facebook. Music. A huge thank you to Gunnar Olson for the wonderful music provided for this podcast. You can follow him on Instagram at gunbuns, that's G-U-N-B-U-N-S, as well as his website, gunnarolson.net. Check out some of the samples that he has recorded. They're amazing. He's an amazing percussionist. If you want to follow the show, we've got a Facebook group, Some of All Fears. Instagram, Twitter, you can find us at Some Fear Fans. If you have some feedback for the show, email me at somefearfans, SOMEFEARFANS, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to take those into consideration. Also, if you'd like to be a guest, email me at somefearfans@gmail.com. We can try to iron out some details and get that settled in. Give us some feedback if on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review. It makes the show bigger, and it's not going anywhere. I'm going to record as many shows as I possibly can. If you want to follow me on social media, I am at Ryan Perio. It's RyanPerrio on all social media platforms. You can follow me there, and you can check me out at RyanPerrio.com, my website. I'll try to list upcoming shows there as well. It's been kind of spotty because as soon as I set it up, that's when the pandemic happened, and everything's kind of just in a holding pattern. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Next week, we'll have another guest with another fear. Thanks for listening.